Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavruta, Yerdana Azband. Our daf of the day, Masechet Eruvin, daf Nun Gimel, page 53. Our daf begins a new perek, and the or it's in the middle of a Mishnah that begins on the previous, the end of the Amud of Nun Bet, but really we're beginning a new perek and a new daf and a new Mishnah all at once. We're going to see that much of today's daf is not actually on this Mishnah, or it's not in the Mishnah on the way that we might assume. The Mishnah reads, Ketzad ma'abrin et ha'arim. How do you make that eruv? How do you extend the boundaries of your cities? Bayit nichnas, bayit yotzeh. Because you end up with, many cities are not built so smoothly, so you'll end up with a ragged outline of the city, or you'll have even one building which will have bits and parts of it leaning out. Pagum nichnas, pagum yotze, hayusham gud kidiot, gvohot, asarat tfachim, o gisharim, unifashot, bahen bayit, dira, mutziin, etamida, kenegdan. So, what happens if you were to draw a line, a straight line around the edge of the city, right? And so then you have one, in the same way, you have one house that's, a little bit in and a little, one house that's a little bit out of this, basic circumference of the city, and you have a turret, right, on your house that, on one house that is, leans into the city, and one that actually extends beyond that line, right? And then what happens if you have any walls that could be as high of 10 as 10 tefachim high, or bridges or statues or any monument over a grave, right? Any of that is going to be they're going to extend the measure of that side of the city, as if it were, in fact, that's where the city extends to. Va'osinota kamin tavla mubat kideshi nishkar et hazaviot. So you basically measure it as if it's square, so that it will get that those corners, and then you have even more space to your city as compared to a round space, which is, right, if you have a circle that has the same diameter as the length of the, let's say, down the middle of the square, and but then the square of course has those extra corners added onto the circle, and you have more space. You have a greater area, surface area of your city. So this is talking about how do you extend it, and basically that's exactly how you extend it. You kind of subsume all possible territory into the city that you could do. But the Gemara doesn't ask this question right away. Doesn't ask any question on this process right away. Rather, it does what we see. I don't know. It happens where the Gemara starts talking about the language of the Mishnah itself. Rav Ushmuel, chad tani ma'abrin, v'chad tani ma'abrin. Now, if I were a Yemenite, you would hear the difference between one pronouncing this with an ayin, ma'abrin, mem ayin bet rish yod nun, and the other mem aleph bet rish. Bet resh yud nun. And the question here is ma'abrin with an ayin, or is ma'abrin with an aleph? And the machloket of Rav and Shmuel here is at least initially nameless, right? It says one says this and one says that, and it's not yet clear whose opinion is which. Man zitznan ma'abrin, the one who holds that it's with an aleph, aver aver, the one who maintains that this question of how do you ma'abrin et ha'arim, that he says it with an aleph, is of the opinion that we're talking about going essentially limb by limb to measure out the city. The aver with an aleph means limb. And then that language, that term, me'abrin, means how do you kind of take stock of the city in a piecemeal kind of way. Oman titzani me'abrin, and the one who with an ayin, ki'isha ubara. That means like a woman who is pregnant, how do you extend, right? How, the same way that a woman who's pregnant, how do you extend the city to its most external dimensions, I guess. Okay, and the idea is, and both of them end up with the same psak, meaning they both say you're going to include these protrusions or whatever that extends outside of a smooth circumference. You're going to include it into the city, and that's going to be the case whether you read it with an aleph or an ayin. But the question here is, so the Gemara is kind of, I don't know, digging down, drilling down to get to the nitty-gritty of the language. Okay, now, what's nice about this is that instead of just leaving it aside and saying, okay, now we know that there's no real practical difference in terms of the halacha, the Gemara says, well, there's other times that Rav and Shmuel focused on the language in the same kind of way, namely Maarat HaMachpelah. Marat HaMachpelah is the cave of the patriarchs, where the patriarchs are buried, and in near Hebron, in Hebron. And again, it's a machloket Rav and Shmuel. Chadamar shnei batim ze lifni mizeh, b'chadamar bayit v'aliyah al gabav. So the question is, Rav and Shmuel disagree. Is it that they are two caves, right? How are the how, what does it mean, Maharat HaMachpelah, the doubling of the cave? Is it that they are two next to each other, or is it that one is on top of the other? Now, in this day and age, you can go to Maharat HaMachpelah, I mean, with careful traveling instructions, right? But you can go there and you can see what the structure is and where these burial, what the status is for each of the couples that is buried there. But in for Rav and Shmuel, I'm guessing that they weren't, it wasn't such easy access. I might be wrong about that, but I don't know that they traveled to see it, because otherwise, why are they having a machloket? They can just go in and look. Do you know, Yudina?
Nope, I don't know the answer to that.
So I'm sure somebody does. The fact, again, the fact that I don't know doesn't mean that nobody knows. Bishlama lamanda mar ze al gav ze. So the Gemara says, well, it makes sense to say that when you're talking about doubling, that it could be one on top of the other. But for the one who is going to say that one is within the other, so to speak, or that one is further into the cave than the other, how do you have a doubling there, right? The Gemara does not like that that's the, you know, an application of the language of doubling. And so then the Gemara continues, shekfula bezugot. Rather, it's doubled by the pairs, meaning the matriarchs and the patriarchs who are there. Mamre, Kiryat Arba, Amar Rebbe Yitzchak, Kiryat Arba, Zugot. The fact that it's called the village, I guess, of the four, right? That's already pairs, two pairs. Adam v'chava, Avram v'yitzara, Yitzchak v'ifka, Yaakov v'laya, right? We know that Rachel died on the way and her burial place is in Beit Lechem. Right, so the idea is that you have pairs here, then already you've got a doubling. You don't need to worry about the physical structure of the cave. There are some other agaritas on this stuff that I happen to love. They are long time familiar to me, and I would love to share them. One of them here very specifically is about Nimrod and how he has several different names, or rather we have what those who are scholars of Midrash call a conservation of biblical personalities, that we have a number of biblical people, right, names, where instead of saying, oh, there's all these different personalities in the Bible, instead the Midrash comes and say, this person is that person, is that person, is that person. And there are some who are much more famous than Nimrod for whom this happens, but here it says that Nimrod is Amraphel, and there's a whole discussion as to why, and I'm not going to get into it because this is a long, very rich daf. And as I said to Yardina when we were preparing, I wish we could just read the whole thing. And she said, do you want it to be an hour? So we're not reading the whole thing.
Yes, we did want to read the whole thing. No, but that section there is very nice. But I'm going to move down to something else. But just one thing about the Maharat HaMachpelah. It is interesting that they sort of didn't know the answer to that question of like how it is actually structured.
I don't know why not. I it's puzzling to me. And I feel like maybe I once knew the answer to this question, but I don't at this time.
I think it's next to, but I really could be wrong. I haven't been there in years. That's the honest truth.
I mean, when you go in there, there are indeed different caverns, I guess I would say, of set aside for each pair. And there are different days. I mean, now, because it's a political hop, you know, mess, right? It's not really, right? So when you can go into which, and the Jews can't go into the cave of Yitzchak and Rivka except for maybe it's 10 days of the year, I don't remember. And then there are other days that the Jews, you know, relinquish control of, I don't remember which ones, and let the Arabs go in. It's a mess,
right?
Right? But as a physical structure, it's still there, meaning it's standing. I mean, this is, you know, millennia.
Yep. No, it's pretty amazing. All right. I'm going to hop down to something else later on the page, which is talking, again, it's one of these, what I always call the meta discussions, where you're sort of seeing the Amoraim reflect on themselves, the methodology of learning. And here, at least, they sort of reflect also about where they are in the history and the process of the Mesorah and learning. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Liban Shel Rishonim Kepituchos Shel Ulam. The shell achronim kipitcho shel hechal, Va'anu kim lo negav machat sitkan. Right? So what does he say? So this is coming after a discussion about sort of saying that Rabbi Yoshia was like Rabbi Meir. And then Rabbi Yochanan comes to basically say the hearts here, right, of the Rishonim, right, of the earlier sages is like the doorway to the entrance hall of the temple, which we know was 20 by 40 amot, right? In other words, it was a big entrance. And the Achronim of later Chachamim, it was like the opening of the Heichal, which was 10 by 20 amot. So in other words, the opening starts to get smaller. And us, right, we in this generation, okay, we are like the eye of a fine needle, right? And so what Rabbi Yochanan's point here is to say that, you know, sort of as the generations go on, you know, the sort of the ability or the opening to sort of take in information, to take in Torah, starts to dwindle. Now, the Rabbi Yochanan who's here, he is a second generation Amora, so I think that's also important. It's that Rabbi Yochanan, and he also was sort of on the, you know, cusp of, you know, being between, you know, the Tanaim and the Amoraim, right? Like he actually spent some time learning with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and he's quoted all over the Babylonian Talmud and the Jerusalem Talmud because he was in Eretz Yisrael. So it's interesting to also have him see this because as a transitional figure, it's sort of like he's recognizing that there was a transition here, right? That sort of, you know, the previous, you know, the previous generations were somehow able to absorb more Torah. He's now the beginning of a generation where there's much, much, you know, less of a chance. Their opening is only as big as the eye of a needle. So then they go through to explain it exactly, right? Rishonim, Rabbi Akiva, Achronim, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, right? So these are just Tanayim. Ika Damri, some say the Rishonim is Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, Achronim, Rabbi Yoshia Beribi, Va'anukim lo negav machat tzitkit, right? And again, he repeats that. Now we have Abaye come, right? Amar Abaye, remember, who's later than Rabbi Yochanan, Va'anan ki sichta begude lagamra, right? So he says, we're like a peg in the wall with regard, you know, when it comes to Torah study, right? The idea meaning to put a peg into a wall is difficult to do, right? So again, like the Torah, it doesn't penetrate as well into this generation. Amar Rabba, Rabba comes ba'anan ki etzbata bikri litzaba, right? He says we're like a finger in wax when it comes to svara, like to reasoning, right? Because a finger doesn't easily go into wax. And when you pull the finger out, nothing comes out with it. Amar Ravashi, now this is actually amazing, right? Anan ki etzbata bivarei l'shicha, right? So Rav Ashi says, we're like a finger in a pit when it comes to forgetfulness, right? Just like a finger can easily go into a pit, we easily forget our studies. Now, this is amazing because who's Rav Ashi? We say that Rav Ashi is, you know, the person who basically sort of redacted the Gemara, right? He's considered to be sort of in the line of Moshe Rabbeinu, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and then it's Rav Ashi. And even he considered himself, right, that somehow, you know, some of these things were getting lost. But I think to me at least, the key here is that I think what's really being talked about here, and this will go on to the next part of the Gemara that I want to share is that things had to start to be written down, right? Remember, we're at this point where Torah Sheba'al Peh previously had not been written down. And then at the times of the Tanaim and Amoraim, we're starting to have to write actually parts of this down. And so the fact that it can no longer be really transmitted the way it was supposed to be, which is Torah Sheba'al Peh, right? I think that's really what they're alluding to here. Things had to be written down. They had to be sort of almost codified in a way that in previous generations, people were just able to sort of commit to memory. And having that ability to memorize is, I think shows a certain type of mental ability that was lacking in the next few generations. And then they go on, and I think we see this as a continuation. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, B'nei Yehuda shehikpidu al lishonam, nitkama toratam biyadam. B'nei Galil shelo hikpidu al lishonam, lo nitkama toratam biyadam. Right? So now they go on to say the following, right? That Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, that basically the people of Yehuda, they were particular in the speech, and the people in the Galil were not particular in their speech. And then they conclude by saying, Talia Milsa, right? What does it mean or that they were particular with their language? Ella b'nei Yehuda daya kalishna umatnit umatnichi luchu simana, right? They were careful with their language and they would make mnemonics. And therefore they would be able to remember things. In other words, what it's telling you here is this is transmission, I think, of Torah Sheba Al Peh, right? They had systems in place so that their memorization would be better. And therefore their learning was much more detailed oriented. B'nei Galil, delo daike lishana, the B'nei Galil, the people in the Galil were not careful. Below matniche lehu simana, they didn't use mnemonics. And therefore, they were not able to remember things as well. They go on with another difference. B'nei Yehuda gamru mechad rabba, nitkamu taratam biyadam. Right? B'nei Yehuda, they would learn from one rabbi. B'nei Galil deka gamri mechad rabba, lo nitkamu taratam biyadam. But the people of the Galil, they didn't study from one teacher. They would go to different teachers. And I think here, maybe what it's saying is the importance of studying with one teacher is you really learn one solid methodology. Right. Whereas if you're learning from lots of different people, maybe things are not as solidified because there's so many different ways of approaching a particular topic. And therefore, they were not able to really remember their Torah. Ravina Amar B'nei Yehuda Degalu Masechta Nitkaimai Torah Tam B'Yadam. For B'nei Yehuda, they would reveal ahead of time or they would disclose ahead of time what Masechta they were going to learn so that people could study in advance. Right. That's what some of the commentators explain this. B'nei Galil, the lo galu masachta, lo nitkaman Torah tabiyadam. And the people of the Galil, they didn't disclose this, and therefore they would not remember it. And so I think, therefore, what in this discussion of the B'nei Yehuda and the B'nei Galil, really what the Gemara is doing here is it's giving us a methodology of how to be a good learner, right? And this will continue on to the next step also, which we'll talk about tomorrow. But that the idea here is that, you know, you need to have methods or tools of how you actually memorize things. You need to have one teacher whose methodology you're going to use. And the third piece is you have to prepare. You can't just walk into a class. You need to be prepared beforehand. And these are all things that are going to make sure that your Torah will be nitzkaima, that it will stay with you.
So I think as a methodology, like there's no question that this is excellent planning, excellent advice, and clearly it lasted B'nai Yehuda. But I kind of want to hear one of the B'nai Galil coming and defending their approach, and we don't see that here, right? Like
I hear what you're saying.
They're just panned. They're just criticized. Like, right. is this the Torah of the victors, or is this the victors' Torah because the others were just so weak?
I'm going to add
so
another layer to it, which is, where did the majority of the Tanaim live?
All of
the Tanaitic cities are in the Galil. So it's also, so I wonder if this is also, is this making sort of a pre-Tana question? Like, where are they talking about this point in time historically? That's also what's interesting to me. Like, are they talking about pre-Tanaitic times? Like, in other words, did the people of B'nai Yehuda, was this why they were not the ones who were forced to write down, you know, the Torah Sheba Al Peh? And are they making a comment about all the rabbis who lived in the Galil?
And who did write it down?
And that's why they did write it down and ultimately were responsible for the Mishnah, because all those Tanaitic cities, right? Shepharam, I'm blinking on what all of them are, but, you know, they're all in the, you know, Katsrin, like this is where they are. They're in the Galil.
Right. So I feel like, again, this is one of those times when I'd like to have the backstory of, you know, is there some kind of internecine rivalry, something going on that between them that we don't see because we only see the Dapim that we have. And this is the, you know, as you say, this is really, you know, how you learn. This is how you learn well. This is how you retain your information. It's a no-brainer. Do we even need the other side? But I'm curious to know historically what happened there. I feel like something did. That doesn't mean it did. It just seems that way. Or I'm curious about it. Okay. The other thing I wanted to say is that it does seem here that as much as there's like you said, there's a review of, or so often we see a review of content, and here we're seeing a review of who the people are and what their approaches are. And that also, I feel like it became important to save. It became important to have these discussions about the sages themselves and not just the halacha, so to speak. So on Amabet, towards the end of Amabet, there's a whole discussion here, right? There's been all this ongoing discussion of over how sharp and learned these sages are. And then we have this bit that I think is you'll hear and I hope you'll agree with me. It's rather wonderful in many different ways. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chanina, Miyamai lo nitzachti Adam. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chanina says, nobody ever defeated me in a in a game of wits, in any verbal sparring. Chutz mi isha, tinok v'tinoket. He said only three people ever did. One was a woman, one was a young boy, and one was a young girl. Isha, mahi. What was the story with the woman? He once was a guest in an inn, and the hostess Astali Pulin. She made the proprietor of the inn made him beans. Beyom Rishon achaltim velo shi'artim mehen klum. He says the first day he ate them and he left nothing over, right? Because that's he says, even though the proper etiquette might have been that he should like be a little polite and leave a little bit over, he must have been very hungry, I suppose, right? We're gonna find out. Shnia lo shiarti mehen klun. The second day, again, he didn't leave anything over. B'yom shlishi hikdichatan b'melach. The third day, she salted them. She salted the beans. Kivan she ta'amti mashachti yadi. Yadai mehen, right? She oversalted them so that they were inedible. He tasted them. He took his hands away from them, meaning he did not eat them. So then, what happens? Amrali, she says to him, Rabbi, mipnei ma in chasoid, why aren't you eating? Amarti la, kfar sa'arati bim ba'od yom. I ate earlier, right? He's being polite. He doesn't want to say your food is inedible. Amrali, hayalacha limshoch yadecha min hapat. She says you should have left a little room. Right? You should have kept your hands away from so much bread so you could have a little bit more room for your beans. Amra li, Rebbe, Shema lo hinachti pe'ah b'rishonim. She says, maybe you didn't leave any remainder on the first 2 days, and that's why you're leaving over today. Namely, sorry, Shema lo hinachti pe'ah b'rishonim. Lo kach amru chachamim. Didn't the sages say, Ein misharin pe'ah be'ilpas? Aval Misharin Pe'abikara. He said they said you don't have to leave a remainder in the pot. I mean you can eat all the food that has been cooked, but you leave a remainder on the plate as simply to be polite. And in that way, right, according to this, he says, in this way she bested him, right? Because she came up with a whole Gemara understanding of why it might have been that he would have left these beans over. Right, when really he, as far as he's concerned, it wasn't a verbal game at all. He was just trying to be polite in not saying that he didn't like the food. But in the meantime, she puts him in his place. So that's one story. And the fact that this is a woman is going to become important as the Gemara goes on. And then we've got the case of the Tinoket. Mahi pamachat hayiti mahalech b'derech v'ita derech overet b'sadeh v'iti mahalech ba. So he's walking on along the path, and the path passes through a field, and he's walking on the path that goes through the field. Amrali, and this young girl says, "Rebbe, lo sadehizo." The Rebbe, she says, "Isn't this a field? You're not supposed to walk through a field because you don't want to damage the crops." So Amartila, he says to her, "Lo derech kvusha," he meaning it's a well-trodden path, right? This is a path through the field. He's not walking on the actual crops. Amrali. Listim kamotcha. She says to him, "Well, yeah, robbers like you have trodden over this path, so it's become a well-trodden path," which is such a little like I can picture the girl saying this to the man, who she's supposed to respect, and instead says, "Well, yeah, because bozos like you are using it as a thoroughfare when they're not
Right.
supposed
Well, my
to be."
assumption with this was she didn't actually know who he was. It was more like she just sort of stated the obvious to him in a really delightful way.
Oh right, exactly. I don't think that Reb Yehoshua ben Chananya as a sage was particular. That's not, there's no indication here that she knows that she's talking to, a one of Chazal,
Yes, I would
put it that
agree.
way. Okay, and then the third case is again the story with a boy, and again he's walking on a path, and the kid says, "This path is short and it's long," and You know, and the question, you know, the question of walking around the gardens and using the trails to get there. And the boy says, "Did you tell me this way is short?" And he says, "And didn't I tell you that it was long?" Right? Meaning, there is a whole back and forth here, to explain exactly his journeys, around this particular, or you know, this path through the city. But I'm more interested right now in the fact that one of these people is a woman and one of these people is a girl out of these three that bested him, because the next bit, and I'll turn this back to your Dana, is very, very connected to the fact that, you know, on the one hand, here we have all this wise, sharp discourse and challenge coming from women, females, right? And then the whole question of, you know, to what extent was that even a norm, comes to a head in the very
Right,
last
and
bit
this is
of
a
this
very,
gaffe.
very famous Gemara. I don't think we'll have enough time because we spent a lot of time on other things. And in a way, I almost feel like I'd rather talk about things that aren't as famous. But it reads as follows, right? Rabbi Yossi Aglile, Haveka Azel Beorcha, Afkecha Liburia Amar La. So Rabbi Yossi Aglile was walking, you know, on a path, and he saw Buria, and he says to her, Be'ezah Derech Nelech L'Lod, right? Four words, right? He says to her, how do I get to Lod? Amra, again, another important Tannaitic city. Amra Le, right? She says, Galila Shota, right? So she says to him, right? You foolish I guess from the Galil, I can't say that word, Galilean. But again, this sort of Galilean, thank you.
Galilean,
But
but
this,
it
right,
speaks
this
to the
ties
first
the whole,
part. It
right,
speaks to the first
this
part of what
ties
the
the whole daf
Galileans.
together in a way, right? Lo kach amru chachamim. Didn't our chachamim say this? Al tirbe sicha im ha'isha, quoting the famous Mishnah from Perkei Avos, right? You should not talk so much with women. Haya lecha lomar be'eza lelud, right? You should have just said be'eza lelud. You should have just said where's lewd or how to lewd, right? In other words, getting down from four words to two words. So there's two pieces here, right? One of it is, I think it's an example of the wisdom of women. It's also an example of a somebody from the Galil not being careful with their speech. And then it goes on, and then, well, actually, the Buria part tomorrow, we'll read tomorrow because it's a whole separate topic. But this is a very, very famous story of Buria, and I think it speaks to, you know, how respected she was, the fact that it's included here. But I do think it's an important part to the story as well that he's from the Galil, and this to me is a great example of like famous stories with details that get left out, right? Because when it's in the context
Right.
of
Well
the
said.
Galil piece, the story actually becomes much less about women, but I think most people quote it as being about women. And I actually read, when now that I saw it on the dot, I read the story totally differently.
Stay tuned. That's our DAF discussion for the day. Thank you for joining us. Rank us, review us where you get your podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Come tell us what you think about these myriad of different approaches and interpretations from this daf, including, of course, the sharp language spoken to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya. And until tomorrow, go.